Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Great to have you on the show. And in the second hour of today's show, I've got Malcolm Roberts back on. Malcolm's been on the show a couple of times before. He's an engineer with qualifications in earth sciences and knows a lot about climate science and has extensive experience dealing with the fraudulent claims of the cartels and their scientific lapdogs around the world who are trying to essentially change the way our society works to roll out some new form of global social order, and using the guise of science, using the men in white lab coats as the reason why we have to change everything. It's an incredibly outrageous and insulting way to be thus kind of steamrolled into social change with this claim about, you know, science tells us, therefore we have to do it. Anyway, but enough of the prelude there. Malcolm, welcome back to Truth News Radio.
Thank you, Harrowood. It's a pleasure to be back.
Yeah, look, Malcolm, I've been getting a lot of correspondence from you. You've been incredibly busy over the past few months, and you've actually given formal notice to virtually the whole upper elite of Australian politics and the CSIRO and a number of other figures in Australia in regard to your knowledge and your research and your well-grounded views about the lack of evidence that human beings drive climate change through carbon dioxide. This subject is a really difficult one to broach with people who haven't gone down the rabbit hole somewhat to try and understand it. Because, you know, Malcolm, you know, many of the people I know simply think that, well, you know, they're scientists and the scientists do their job and the scientists have reported to the government and, you know, what are you making this big fuss about? You're not a scientist, you're not an expert, you know, so therefore you shut up, let the experts deal with it. And this is the way many of us who have been sceptical about this for years have been treated, with complete disdain. Now, of course, you're not in the category of someone who's a complete layperson, but then again, you've been pretty much treated with disdain as well. And I just think it's really important to understand that the subject matter that we're dealing with here is not a simple one. Now, Malcolm, can you possibly just give us a rundown on your sequence of correspondences and what you've been doing over the last few months?
I'd be happy to, Harrowood. Before I do that, though, I think it's important to understand that this is all about control, as you quite rightly identified in the introduction. And always under control, there is fear. And right. So we who have been doing a lot of research, such as you and I on this, recognize that the agenda is about controlling humans. And some people, when they first start understanding this, they feel daunted. What I'm coming to realize now is a lot more hope, because I'm starting to see the fear well and truly under those who are controlling, the fear in those who are controlling. And for people who want to understand my work in the last few months, to get back to your latest question,
sure,
I'd suggest they Google CSIROH. That stands for, that CSIRO is the name of our government-funded, taxpayer-funded scientific research body that has been tarnished in recent years. It used to have a fine reputation worldwide. It still does have many fine people, but it's been entirely politicized, especially in climate. But if they Google CSIROH, add the word H, they will come up in Google with the link at the very top of the Google offerings. It'll come up with the link to the CSIROH report that I've put out. And underneath that, there are around about 30 appendices that detail items covered in the report. So the report is fairly concise because people don't want to read too much these days, but where they need more detail, they can easily delve into any of the appendices. Now, also on that page, there's a link that takes people to exchanges of letters with politicians and academics. So if they click on that link, they'll end up on another page that details my or presents my correspondence with the politicians and also with the alarmist academics funded by the taxpayers. It's also some of the mainstream media, including the government-funded ABC, and also my correspondence with the CSIRO, which stands for Commonwealth Scientific and Industry Research Organisation, the taxpayer-funded organisation, and also Australia's Bureau of Meteorology. Now, the key thing is, not only, as you said correctly, that none of these organisations, the politicians, the academic advocates of cutting carbon dioxide, the so-called academic experts, I don't call them scientists because they're not scientists, they're contradicting science. The government scientific agencies, supposedly the climate associations, the Australian Academy of Science, the key thing is that not one of them has any empirical scientific evidence, as you pointed out, that human carbon dioxide causes global warming. All of them contradict the empirical scientific evidence, and all of them are funded by government. And the same comments apply to the IPCC. So I've essentially, over the last 5 years, been holding these people accountable. I presented the CSIRO report, my review of the CSIRO. I then wrote to the politicians, the academics, the agencies, and held them accountable. And not one of them has contradicted any detail at all in my report. Not one.
Yes, I did have a chance to read some of the replies there. And what I've noticed is... really a lack of engagement, a tendency to use the argument from authority. You know, there have been these very important people, important illustrious organisations, people with lots of letters after their names who are greatly respected, who believe this, therefore it must be true. I mean, that is such a transparent fallacy, isn't it?
Yes, and it reveals not only the fallacy, but it reveals desperation, and it confirms that they haven't got any empirical scientific evidence, any real-world evidence, Harrowood, because if they had any such evidence, all they had to do was give it to me and I'd be gone. But yeah. But they can't do it. They just cannot do it. And so when they use an appeal to authority or a bogus claim, it just confirms that they haven't got any evidence.
And one interesting thing I might just point out is I noticed that the reply that you had from Chris Bowen actually had one sentence which appears to be a direct quote, well, the same direct quote that is in the letter you got from the CSIRO. And the statement is, the CSIRO continues to build upon a proud history of more than 80 years of science excellence. Now, I just find that interesting because it would seem that Chris Bowen was given that to respond to you with, or maybe he took it off a website or something, but it's the exact same sentence is actually in the letter from the CSIRO. Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting, and it's easy to understand because my understanding is that Chris Bowen, before he resigned as minister, he was Minister for Science and Research, which incorporated responsibility for the CSIRO. So what he has done, as my guess, is that he has asked the CSIRO to come up with a response for my letter to him. And they've come up with the same stuff that they used to respond to me. So it's just an appeal to authority. They have come up with no empirical scientific evidence, no real-world science, as you pointed out. So he's just copied and pasted what they've given him.
Yes, and beyond that, it's also incredibly self-serving and arrogant. I'll just read the rest of that paragraph here from the letter. The CSIRO continues to build upon a proud history of more than 80 years of science excellence. Well, that's just that's a PR statement, okay? That's not – I mean, that's just advertising. Then he goes on to say, its reputation is built on that record of scientific excellence as evident from the peer-reviewed scientific literature. This is so for all fields of research that the CSIRO undertakes and not just related to climate. The CSIRO's research is constantly ranked in the top 1% of world research organisations for 14 disciplines and is widely respected and trusted by the Australian community. Well, whoop-de-doo. You know, I mean, that really just proves everything, doesn't it?
Okay, that's an important point you raise, and I just think it's important that we recognise that the CSIRO had a very strong reputation worldwide as a scientific organisation, not only for pure research, but also for applying what it learned and what it discovered. It also continues to have very fine people. But probably around about 10, 20 years ago, that started to diminish the reputation. It still has many fine people, but in the area of climate science, it's not worth a cent. It's known to be corrupted, and it is known to be corrupting the climate science. It has no empirical scientific evidence. I have a history now of around about 3 years, I think, from 2009, of communicating with the senior executives of the CSIRO, including the chief executive, and they have failed every time to provide any real-world evidence that human carbon dioxide causes global warming. What's more, their guy in charge of the climate area, Dr. Andrew Johnson, who's the group executive for the environment, he has contradicted empirical scientific evidence. Their documents, their public documents are glossy, appear to be scientific, but they're not scientific at all. They contradict empirical scientific evidence. So what I'm very concerned about is that science in this country is being smashed just as it is in other countries, and the reputation of CSIRO is being tarnished.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, simply posturing, like as Chris Bowen is doing in that letter, isn't helping any, is it? I mean, you can't just talk the talk. You know, you've got to, and this is yeah, I mean, what's actually happened, I believe, is that in some ways with the way in which our government has grown so bloated and so carried away with itself, is that they believe their own myths, they believe their own projection of reality. And in some ways, Malcolm, there is a class of people in our society who now almost follow that sort of Orwellian concept that reality is something that they construct. I mean, this was a central part of George Orwell's concept of a totalitarian society, which is that the powers that be create your reality for you. And the actual reality, the physical reality, is no longer of any importance. It's the reality that Big Brother wants you to believe in. What's your take on that?
I think that's a really strong perception you've come up with there. That's what we're seeing in both major parties in this country. We're certainly seeing it in the Greens as well. It's in Julia Gillard's responses to many questions, and it really does convey a lot of arrogance. And again, Harrowood, when we look behind that, a lot of fear. I mean, if we look at the last paragraph of Chris Bowen's response to me, he said, "Should you believe there are any questions regarding the integrity of the science undertaken by CSIRO or the other organisations cited in your document, the proper place to address those issues is in the scientific literature." Well, the reality is that the scientific literature on climate science is known to be corrupted. We know that the scientific peer review process is not scientific at all. We know that it's crony review, not scientific peer review, and we know that it cannot be trusted. Yet here is he trotting out the same old pat comments about scientific peer review. The other thing about that is that it's not my document has been sent directly by registered mail with delivery confirmation to the top 10, or rather the most prominent public advocates of cutting carbon dioxide amongst the scientific, so-called scientific community. It's been
Malcolm, we're just going to break. We're just going to break. Sorry to cut you off there. Okay. We're going to break. We'll be right back after these short messages. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Do stay with us. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. They say everything can be replaced. And every distance is not near. So Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. My guest today is Malcolm Roberts, a man on the front line of the war against climate disinformation, trying to shine a bit of light. And I believe that in the end that the light will prevail. I do believe that that it's sort of inexorable. I actually feel like it's like the march of science, it's the march of truth, it's the march of destiny. And we look at history and how we've historically had to pull ourselves out of the Stone Age and eras of you know, great hardship and medieval times, and the scientific revolution came, and that the dogmas of the church had to be basically let go of as the truth of the realities of this world became known. But we have tended in many ways to fall back into dogma, and I believe that this is another phase. But now, Malcolm, we were just going through there the letter from Chris Bowen, and you were cut off there at the break. If you'd like to just continue, I'll give you the floor.
Well, he discussed peer review. He said you need to just have your analysis peer review in the scientific community. Well, what I've done is I've sent it to every single politician, and they're not scientists, but I've sent it to them to see if they can find anything wrong with my key point, which is not about the science, it's about the corruption of science. And that is their responsibility. Yep. They're responsible for taxpayers' funds. But in addition, I've sent it, as I started saying there, to the 10 most prominent academic, I won't call them scientists, advocating cutting human carbon dioxide. Not one of them has been able to find anything wrong with my anything specifically wrong with my CSIRO document. I've sent it to the country's chief scientists. I've sent it to the Australian Academy of Science. Both of those have failed to identify any specific errors in my report. I've sent it to media networks, including the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, and tried to hold them accountable. I've sent it to the CSIRO itself, the chief executive and the group executive responsible for the environment, taking responsibility for the climate area. I've sent it to the Australian Bureau of Meteorology. Now, I got responses from the CSIRO chief senior executive and also from the Bureau of Meteorology. Neither of the heads of those two organizations dared respond to me, but some of their underlings did. And so there, they've responded with the same kinds of things, appeal to authority, no empirical scientific evidence. So I've just kept holding them accountable, asking them for their evidence. They haven't got any. So what we've got here is I've not only subjected myself and my report to the so-called top scientists who take a different view, I've opened myself up and my report up to criticism right across the whole community. And I've posted it on the internet. I've sent it to prominent journalists. And no one has been able to find any error. And the politicians, I've had out of 226 politicians who I sent registered posts with delivery confirmation, five of them responded by returning it to me unopened. The others, though, of the others, only 13 responded about this massive corruption of taxpayer funds, and not one of them was able to point out any error, including Greg Combe, the Minister for Climate Change, and he used the same old appeals to authority and the same pat answers, and not any evidence at all. And I had then had the delight in being able to respond to his claims and show him where he was totally wrong in every one of his claims. So my report is subject not just to the scientific peer review, it's subject to peer review in the community and in the political organizations and in the scientific organisations, and it's withstood everything.
Yes, I notice here in the reply from the Bureau of Meteorology, from Neil Plummer, quote here, he says, there is very strong international scientific consensus indicating that increasing atmospheric greenhouse gas concentrations further will result in more global warming. So again, he's thrown another furphy, another logical fallacy. It's quite interesting, isn't it, when you're aware of these logical fallacies, and I wasn't actually until a couple of years ago, and I think it was Lord Monckton who first made me aware of that, that in fact these are actually logical fallacies, and it's not just me saying that. There's a history going back to Aristotle, that defines what a logical fallacy is. And so to try and argue that something is the case simply because other people believe it is the case is not a valid argument.
No, and as I said before, Herowood, all the Bureau of Meteorology has to do is give me empirical scientific evidence, the real-world measurements data that show that I am wrong and that human carbon dioxide drives climate. And that's the end of me, completely gone, shot out of the water.
Yeah.
But the fact that they can't do that reveals that they won't do that, and it reveals that they haven't got the data. And I've been through, the Bureau of Meteorology has been tainted by quite justifiable claims that it is corrupting the evidence. And even the Hadley Climatic Research Unit from the University of East Anglia has exposed that the Bureau of Meteorology in Australia has made some pretty big errors in its measurements. And we've seen some doctoring, raising of the recent temperatures and lowering of some past temperatures to exaggerate the very modest warming that ended 15 years ago. So, I mean, we just cannot trust the Bureau of Meteorology, and by their own words, they acknowledge indirectly that they have no evidence.
And there's also this this accusation almost that you're not going through the right channels. You've been told that you should be putting papers in for peer review. And then it actually says here from the Department of Meteorology that we do not provide peer review, or in one of these letters it actually says, yes, it says the Bureau of Meteorology does not provide a peer review service on request for members of the public. Now, something important about this, it appears to me, Malcolm, from my research in a number of areas, that the peer review process generally in academic research has become very... very clouded, very corrupted. It's not really a very good standard for measuring or a criteria for determining quality anymore. And I mean, I'm saying that having looked at a number of other issues, for example, in say the research on vaccines and some of the problems with vaccines, research into September 11 and what really happened to those buildings that came down. And one of the things that I found is that in many of these areas where you've got large numbers of very qualified experts, and for example, in the 9/11 truth movement, there are thousands of highly qualified architects and engineers and people with strong academic credentials as well. But they find it very difficult to even get a paper published in a scientific journal, even though they're eminently qualified. And in the case of Dr. Andrew Wakefield, who wrote a paper on some of the dangers of the MMR vaccine, it caused such a controversy because it went against the mainstream sort of what the inner circle believes is correct. Because it went against that, it caused this bubbling controversy that went on for about another 10 years. And then the journal Nature, which had originally published it, retracted it with a huge fanfare saying, we've now retracted this peer-reviewed published article by Andrew Wakefield because it's no good, even though it had been peer-reviewed. And that's just to give you an example of what I see is actually happening. That our academic institutions, and I don't know whether it's this corruption of the commercial oligarchies that have so much influenced the way science is done because it's all connected to some sort of money making schemes, and that with government participation, usually quite often through government funded schemes or government healthcare schemes and various things like that. But it has led to the academic institutions that we were sort of trained to believe in as being pretty solid are really not. We are just going to break, but I'd really love to just get your views on that when we come back from the break. So you're with Truth News Radio Australia, and we'll be right back after these short messages. Do stay with us.
Morning, bitter by the evening.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to have your company today. Do please check us out on the internet. You can find us on the web at truthnews.com.au, and you can get all our articles and you can get our podcasts. You can subscribe to our podcasts. And we do a show every week, which goes out on the Logos Radio Network, broadcast out of Austin, Texas. And we welcome your thoughts and comments. My guest today is Malcolm Roberts, and we're going through the latest climate scam research and the efforts of Malcolm to combat the wave after wave of disinformation that is pouring from government and mass media. Now, just before the break there, I was just talking about my experience with understanding this peer review business. Malcolm, what is your take on the whole institution of peer-reviewed academic research these days?
Peer review, Harrowood, is supposedly a quality assurance mechanism. So what we're led to believe is that if someone's paper has been peer-reviewed, it's gone independently before independent peers who are qualified in that field of science. They've reviewed it, made sure there are no errors, made sure that the logic is there, the data is there. And to be done properly, what they do is they actually get the data. They make sure then the analysis is done correctly. They then make sure the logical conclusions are there. They supposedly do it top to bottom. Now, the reality is that the peer review process in climate science is complete nonsense. There is no reassurance at all. If we look at the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, now here's how they do the con. There are thousands of pages in that report. Now, no politician and no journalist is going to delve into those thousands of pages. We know that. They're too busy and they don't have the technical expertise. So what the IPCC does is that they break it down into three areas. They break it down into the so-called science, which says, so they claim, and quite falsely, that human carbon dioxide is causing global warming. Then they have a second section, that's Working Group 1. They have a second section called Working Group 2, which looks upon the impact, supposedly. That's where the scares come in. And then the third one is Working Group 3, which is all about how we can stop this, which is then come up with a carbon dioxide tax. Now, if we go back to the so-called science, the basis, there's thousands of pages in that and supposed to be referenced by hundreds of references. Now, the reality is, Harrowood, that there's one chapter in the whole of those 11 chapters. There's a sole chapter, it's chapter 9 in the 2007 report, that claims global warming exists and that it is caused by human carbon dioxide. That chapter is based upon climate models, numerical computerized models of climate. Those models are unvalidated. They have already been proven completely wrong. What they do, though, in chapter 9 is they carefully word that so that it appears that the data from the output from the models, which are bogus, the model's data output is then treated as measurement. So people reading it casually, those who bother to even read it, think that we're dealing with measurements. We're not. But anyway, the point is that chapter 9 is the sole chapter in all those thousands of pages claiming warming and attributing it to human carbon dioxide. I've read that chapter twice. Other people have read that. Qualified scientists and climate scientists have read it. They agree with me. There is no real-world evidence at all anywhere in that chapter that human carbon dioxide caused global warming. Now, if we delve further into that chapter, we find that that chapter was even breached the IPCC's own guidelines, which state that the lead authors of the chapter must scour the world and go around the world and get a representative group of independent people to assess the literature and then make their recommendations. Well, that wasn't done. They went to primarily four bodies, and they're all funded by government, and they're all tainted by the corruption. And the lead body, the Hadley Climate Center, Climatic Research Unit, was the center of the ClimateGate scandal. And it has no evidence. And what's more, they refused to release the raw data of the ground-based temperature measurements. Now, this is supposed to be an atmospheric effect, the warming of the atmosphere through human carbon dioxide, which is a gas. Now, they use ground-based measurements, but the fundamental principle in peer review is you open up the books and let people look at it. They refuse to let people even look at the ground-based data. Now, then when we see, well, there are three lots of ground-based data. There's the Hadley Climatic Research Unit, there's NASA and NOAA. What people don't realize is that those three databases, those three reports or analyses of temperature all come back to the same raw data, which we cannot get a look at. So in other words, the whole thing should be completely discredited because they won't even let us do the peer review. That means under scientific peer review principles, it should be automatically completely discarded because it's discredited. Secondly, as I said, they're supposed to gather people from all around the world. They take people from primarily from four centers, all tainted, and they have 53 co-authors of Chapter 9. Most of those co-authors are running climate models, computerized numerical models. They're part of a tight-knit cabal. They rely, many of them, rely for their funding upon these models. So they've got a vested interest. So then we take the work of those 53 climate modelers, many of them climate modelers, and we have it peer-reviewed. Well, of the peer-reviewed, of the people doing the peer review of that chapter, only five endorsed the claim that human carbon dioxide caused global warming. The peer review was a complete sham. So we have the IPCC and government bodies saying there are thousands of scientists giving us this decision. In fact, only five reviewers endorsed the claim, and many reviewers are scathing in their comments on Chapter 9. And for example, Vincent Gray, who's had 22 years in the climate field and is a research scientist and has been for more than 60 years, he said there is no empirical scientific evidence in that chapter, which is the same conclusion I came to. He said, what's more, that the IPCC deliberately downplays two known primary factors driving climate. That's the ocean atmospheric decadal oscillations, cycles, and also the solar influence. And so we've got a bogus report that is contradicted, that is not peer-reviewed, and that contradicts the IPCC's own guidelines, and that prevents peer review.
Wow. It's just incredible. I mean, it appears then that this statement that was made about peer review in one of the letters and referring you to, you know, so submit your work for peer review is based on an assumption about how the scientific process works, which ideally it should work that way. But in fact, in the case of the IPCC, it didn't even work that way. There wasn't even the possibility of proper peer review.
That's correct. And the Inter-Academy Council, which is the peak scientific academic body for the academies of science around the world, I think there are 12 or 13 countries involved in that, it came out with a review of the IPCC's procedures and processes for making its reports. That report came out in August 2010. It was scathing in its condemnation of the potential for conflicts of interest, which are not managed. It was scathing in its condemnation of the management of the IPCC. It was seriously questioning the peer review processes and the reporting processes. And there were several other really serious complaints about this. So we're quite often told, Harewood, that the academies of science around the world endorse the IPCC. That is false. The Russian Academy does not. The Chinese Academy does not. The Royal Society of Science in the UK, its executive did come out. It didn't provide any evidence, but then it had a revolt on its hands from its members who wanted that turned around, and they got it turned around because the Royal Society was originally, we believe, endorsing the IPCC because they needed the money from the government. But then when the members got upset, they changed that. So. But more importantly, the Inter-Academy Council did an independent peer review. It's the peak organization. It's the peak organization for all those Academy of Science. It came out and was scathing. So even that nonsense about the academies is, as I said, nonsense.
Yeah, no, you certainly nailed it there. And I think they're going to have trouble wiggling out of the way you've actually carefully framed it. With Truth News Radio, we're about to go to break. We'll be right back for one more segment. Stay with us. A really interesting discussion we're having today. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Talking to Malcolm Roberts about climate change, and we've been going through the misinformation about the scientific process and the peer review process, the way it's corrupted, the way in which it's not even possible to subject the research that's being done by organisations like the IPCC to any proper peer review. It's all controlled. And we've also been going through the letters that Malcolm has written to key figures in Australian politics and business, and you'll be able to find links to all of that on the site. And you can actually see there, it's all laid out really well, and it's a lot of work in all this, and I really do respect what you've done there, Malcolm. So listeners will be able to go to the website, and you'll be able to see the letters that have been written and the replies that have been received and Malcolm's replies to those replies. And also, you've provided a nice little graph there of the time frame that it took for various people to pick up their registered letters, which I thought was interesting. Some of them were quite, and I noticed it was the Labor Party was certainly, statistically an anomaly there, wasn't it? How long it took so many of those Labor Party MPs to pick up their mail.
Well, overall, there wasn't that much of a difference between Labor and the Coalition, actually. Some of the ones who waited 4 and 5 and 6 weeks, there were many ALP. But of those who didn't pick up their mail in the first 2 weeks, they were split pretty evenly. But it is astounding, Herbert, that here's a private citizen spends around about $13 just for printing an article, plus a lot of time, and then registered post to mail it to all of our politicians, 226 of them. So it costs around about $4,500 well, more than that by the time you include the printing.
Yeah.
And what we find is that 14% of them, 1/7, took more than 2 weeks to pick up their mail. Now, their offices are in Parliament House. Mm. What happens is a registered post letter ends up in Parliament House, in the Parliament House post office. Yeah. They then send out a little card saying, come and pick up your mail. Some of them took more than 6 weeks to stroll across to the post office, and they don't even have to do it themselves. Their offices do it.
Yeah.
So their own offices, I mean, they're trying to run the country, and they can't even pick up mail from within their own building.
Yeah, that in itself says a lot. It really does. I mean, it's an incredible indictment of our political people, of our process, of our government. I mean, yeah, it's incredible.
Well, what's more significant is that not one of them has any empirical scientific evidence for the claim that human carbon dioxide caused warming. Not one of them has been able to give me that. Those who responded all failed to do that. All of the responses, they failed to take responsibility for the corruption I've showed. It was really disappointing, Herowood, to see that politicians would say, thank you very much for your wonderful report, and then they would go on and badmouth the opposition and say, it's they're doing a squeaky clean job. And I'm saying, you missed the point. I'm not after your policies. I want you to take notice of the corruption. Not one of them expressed any concern about the massive documented corruption. Not one.
Yeah, they just skip right over it, and they ignore it, and then they just give you talking points, PR statements, and imply that there's something wrong with you. You know, you're making accusations.
Or they say, we agree with you, and here's why, because you validate our report. What? I don't validate your position at all.
I noticed Julie Bishop seemed to give you a reasonable reply, and she said she would be forwarding your letter on to her colleagues. Did anything come of that? I didn't see any further replies from her on that.
No, the replies from MPs, the members of Parliament, they're all up to date. I haven't posted two replies from the ABC yet, but I will be once I process them. But to answer your question about Julie Bishop, nothing has been heard. So that's now around about 6 or 7 weeks since Julie replied to me.
Yeah.
And she said, as you correctly pointed out, that she'd ask Greg Hunt for his information.
Yeah.
So pretty soon I'll be responding again to Julie and asking her if anything's come of it. But they'll all be getting a fax soon, because faxes provide confirmation of receipt. And those faxes will be one page. It'll be very short. I'll take a day to do it. I'll send faxes to all 226 of them in Canberra, probably in their electorate offices because they're on break right now. And I'll be just asking them, pointing out key features of that report and holding them accountable yet again.
Yeah, great. That's great that you're doing that. I mean, you're one of the few people who you're doing what a true citizen has to do in a democracy. If you're a member of a democracy, you have to create your destiny. You can't simply sit back and expect the government to solve your problems, take care of you, and not be corrupt. It will never happen. And I think that's an important message of this show, is what I try to send to tell people, is that you have to make democracy real. And unfortunately, I think the post-war era, we've had so many decades of affluence and peace, is that people were lulled into a complacency, and find it very hard to shake themselves out of that. Do you find that, you know, with the people you've talked to? I mean, you must have encountered that so much in all the discussions you've had.
Yes, it. I think your reasoning is sound in that we've had so many years in which we can be complacent. I think there's something else though, and that is that we have been lulled into that. We've been pushed into that complacency. Now I'm not bragging here, but I've got an MBA from one of the world's top financial schools, the Graduate School of Business at the University of Chicago.
Right.
Now, I was never told there about the banking scam. I was never told about fiat money being created out of thin air,
Banks
controlling the currency, the central banks of many Western developed nations. And I was never told. I mean, I was in the United States. I was never told that the Federal Reserve Bank is not a government organization, as we are led to believe. It's a privately owned organization. I was never told that the Bank of England was a private organization and had been since 1694 when it was formed. Mm. I was never told that many of the other central banks around the world are controlled by the same banks that control the Central Reserve Bank, private banks. I was never told that the governments of many countries, including ours, are controlled by the IMF. I was never told that in the 40s or maybe 50s, when the IMF was formed, federal governments, including ours in Australia, were told that they would have to cede some of their national sovereignty over economic and finance matters to the IMF. Yeah. I mean, you know, we have been lulled into this. What's more, they then corrupt the political systems. We know that the Democrats and the Republicans appear to be opposing each other, but quite often behind the scenes, they're implementing the same agenda. We know that in Australia, for example, UN Agenda 21, when we talk to the politicians, they say, "What? What agenda?" But we know it's part of the Labor Party policy. We know it's part of the Greens policy. We know that some Liberal Party MPs have said that it's part of Liberal Party policy. But do any of them talk about it in public? Has it ever been ratified by Parliament? Have they talk much about it openly? No, they're not. So what we think is going on, Harrowood, is we think we're in a free market. We're not. We think we've got Labor Party taking care of the Liberal Party and keeping each other honest. They're pushing the same agenda, some of them. And so what we've also got is we've fallen into the complacency of thinking that parties will look after us, whereas parties are the problem. Because what we've got, in effect, is we've got many people entering politics for the right reasons. They generally want to do a good job. But once they get there, they're controlled by the party power brokers. And it applies not just to the Labor Party, where it's naked. It applies also to the Liberal Party. A handful of people dictate policy. It may be for good reasons, good motives. It quite often is not. But regardless, the people, when they come into Parliament, kowtow to the power brokers, and essentially four or five people at most run both parties. And some of those people are sharing the same policies on both sides. Both parties, the Labor Party and the coalition parties, since 1975 and the UN's Lima Declaration, have been destroying this country. Many quite ignorantly, but some quite deliberately. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. They're destroying our manufacturing, they're destroying our farming, they're destroying our fishing. And so we are in a, not just lulled into complacency, we have also been manipulated into turning it over to them and not holding them accountable.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautifully put. Now, look, I had a number of points I wanted to raise, but just about run out of time for the show today. But I just want to get one question in to you. It's about repealing the carbon tax. Now, of course, it is a central plank of the Liberal Party, And it's quite clear that Labor is going to lose the election. I don't think there's any doubt in anyone's mind about that. I mean, that seems a foregone conclusion that there's going to be a change of government. But the question here is, how far can we trust? And I'm not saying that I don't trust Tony Abbott personally. He may be completely genuine in what he says, but that doesn't mean that there won't be some way that he's undermined. Because as we know, these political parties appear to report to higher masters. There appears to be people above them that make decisions. And if someone goes against what is already pre-planned, they can be simply got rid of. So we've only got a couple of minutes left, but if you could just quickly address what you think is the likely outcome when the election occurs and the new government is ushered in with great fanfare.
Sure, Herowood. I echo some of your concerns. A number of people echo your concerns. They have doubts about the Liberal Party doing what it's promised. However, they have come out fairly strongly, especially through Tony Abbott, saying they will repeal that. And what's encouraging is they're not just saying we'll repeal the carbon dioxide tax, that's its real name, carbon dioxide tax. I actually call it the deceit tax. But they're not just going to repeal the carbon dioxide tax. They have made a commitment through Tony Abbott, who made it very clear that they would repeal all the associated legislation, and that's essential. Now, having said that, we don't know what else can happen in politics, as you point out, if Malcolm Turnbull came back or whatever. But the other thing to remember is that I have little doubt that the Liberal Party will win. I have little doubt that they will repeal the legislation. However, it may come back in some other form under the Liberals. Will they repeal
Malcolm, I'm afraid we've run out of time. We're going to have to continue this in another show. It has been terrific talking to you today. Thanks so much for coming on, mate.
Thank you very much. You're welcome.
That's a wrap for Truth News Radio for this week. We'll be back next week. See you then.